It's Monday, December 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello. Coming up, Israel kills a senior Hezbollah commander. The U.S. Congress adjourns by actually agreeing on legislation.
I think the Chinese government was just going to pretend that I didn't exist and hoped that I would just simply go away.
A beauty contestant speaks out after Beijing denied entry to China. Also ahead, cancer may simply be caused by bad luck. And Michael Jackson spins to a new music record. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Israel has allegedly assassinated a senior commander from the Lebanese guerrilla group Hezbollah. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Hezbollah says one of its top operatives, Samir Kuntar, was killed in an Israeli airstrike near the Syrian capital, Damascus. The group said two Israeli warplanes violated Syrian airspace and fired four long-range missiles at an apartment building. Kuntar was killed along with eight other people in the attack. In 1979, Kuntar carried out a notorious terrorist attack in Israel. He spent nearly 30 years in an Israeli prison before being released in a prisoner swap. Syrian Information Minister Omran al-Zoabi said the assassination is not the first time Israel has been involved in what he described as terrorist activity inside Syria. He accused Israel of collaborating with Saudi Arabia and Qatar in trying to topple the Syrian regime. Israel did not officially comment on the alleged assassination and stopped short of claiming responsibility. But Cabinet Minister Yuval Steinitz welcomed it. Steinitz said he does not know who carried out the attack, but no one should be sorry for the death of Kuntar, whom he described as a big criminal. Israeli security forces have raised their alert level on the northern border, bracing for possible Hezbollah retaliation. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Israel has struck multiple targets in Syria in the past few years, most of them convoys of what Israel said were weapons and other supplies being sent through Syria to Lebanon. In 2008, Israel freed Kuntar as part of a prisoner exchange with Hezbollah and was given a hero's welcome in Lebanon. Kuntar, known as the Dean of Lebanese Prisoners for being the longest-held Arab prisoner in Israel, was one of hundreds of Hezbollah members who had gone to Syria to fight alongside forces loyal to President Bashar al-Assad since the civil war began there in March 2011. We checked social media reaction from the death of Samir Kuntar, and it has run the spectrum from congratulations to condemnations. At Hadas Altwerg posted on Twitter, praise for Israel from unexpected place, Syria, Dara, once in ancient Israel. At Jonke added, good, riddance of an unusually despicable terrorist. And then there were several Twitter comments that were severely critical of Israel and its allies. At Cryptocoda wrote, Israeli commandos rescue wounded terrorists in Syria. Israel, like America, is a sworn enemy of peace. At Habib_B described what was happening in his area. Israeli jets roaring over Lebanon now for the last half hour after rocket fire in retribution for Israel's assassination of Kuntar. Most of the posts that we found were in the middle with links to news accounts by major outlets of what happened or comments like what at Twi Jewelry wrote, the killing of Samir Kuntar in a government-held neighborhood of Damascus underscored the complexities of the region. We'd love to hear your comments. You can write to us on Twitter. Our handle is at VOA_IE. We're out there each and every day, and we'd love to hear from you. You can follow my account. It is at VOA Stevenson, and we're on Facebook at VOA Asia. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations, VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views, presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This is VOA's International Edition. Washington is ending the year free of the fiscal drama that has so often plagued the city. Congress has adjourned until January, having funded the U.S. government through next September. And in a rare turn of events, with Democrats and Republicans singing each other's praises. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us in the studio to explain how all this happened.
Well, Jim, in the hours before Congress left town, and they always love to leave town at least a week before Christmas, but frequently aren't able to do so because one or another thing has to be passed and they can't find agreement. Well, this time they were able to find agreement after months of negotiations on the contours of a spending bill. A bill emerged. It sailed through both houses of Congress, went to President Obama's desk. He signed it into law. And we had a rare outbreak of genuine bipartisanship to the point where Mitch McConnell got up at a press conference and named various Democratic senators that he wanted to thank for having allowed the moment to materialize. And it was a feel-good moment on a chunk of real estate, Capitol Hill, where feel-good moments are relatively rare these days.
Especially with a Republican-led Congress and a Democrat in the White House, you don't often get a lot of agreement.
Indeed. And it actually went beyond the budget agreement. There was an agreement to reauthorize the Export-Import Bank, which had been suspended for a number of months amid Congress's inability to address that. Congress was able to agree on a transportation bill. This is something that no one could have predicted months ago. The thinking was that heading into an election year, that heads would butt, that disagreement would prevail. But in fact, cooler heads seemed to have prevailed. And there seemed to have been a genuine desire on the part of Republicans who control both houses of Congress not to have any train wrecks with their fingerprints on it. Ahead of the election.
Very important in an election year, as we found out in the last go-around, because there was quite a bit of bickering on the Hill, and Republicans came out looking pretty bad.
They did, although it's been pointed out that the last time that there was a big shutdown, yes, Republicans were blamed, but in the following year, the American public turned around and voted them an even bigger majority in Congress than they'd had previously. So in terms of consequences, yes, there was a momentary dip in the polls for them. And perhaps most damning for Republicans was that they were blamed for this just at the time that the Affordable Care Act's horrible, no good online rollout was this just incredible train wreck. Were it not for this government shutdown, all eyes would have been focused on Obamacare and the really awful rollout that it has.
And a lot of this bipartisanship cooperation really points to Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. There were some rumblings of a potential shutdown, and he pretty much shut that down, at least on the House side.
The message from Republicans seems to be to their members, look, we can't have any train wrecks. Let's not do anything that would poison our chances of retaining our majorities in Congress and perhaps capturing the White House, because that is the real eye on the prize. Republicans know that if a Republican is elected president, that their task in terms of getting legislation through will be much easier.
Well, no worries about a shutdown when it comes to great analysis from Capitol Hill. Michael Bowman covers the Senate for VOA. Mike, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
Spain's Maria La Laguna Royo has been crowned Miss World 2015. The 23-year-old beauty queen won the title on Saturday in Sanya, China. Canada's representative, however, was absent. Anastasia Lin was denied a visa to enter China, apparently because of her human rights activism and Falun Gong faith. VOA Mandarin Service reporter Yang Chen has the story as Carolyn Persutti narrates.
At a National Press Club luncheon Friday in Washington, Anastasia Lin said China lost an opportunity to improve its image and to show the world it is a country of tolerance. Lin said there was no official Chinese explanation as to why she was denied a visa.
There was no answer from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in China or Miss World. I think the Chinese government was just going to pretend that I didn't exist and hoped that I would just simply go away.
The Chinese embassy in Ottawa declined to comment on Lin's visa application, but said in a statement last month that China welcomes all lawful activities organized in China by international organizations or agencies, including the Miss World pageant. But China does not allow any persona non grata to come to China. National Press Club President John Hughes told VOA the NPC held the luncheon a day before the Miss World final because he thinks Lin's case should be the story of the pageant.
Because her words will be going out to the world just as everyone is beginning to cover the pageant. And I don't see how any news organization in the world would cover this pageant in China without mentioning Miss Lin's situation.
The 25-year-old Lin, who moved to Canada from Hunan, China when she was 13, won the Miss World Canada title in May. Lin said she will continue to speak out about human rights abuses in China and call on others to do the same.
We can and we should speak up for those who cannot speak up for themselves.
She also voiced disappointment with the Canadian government and the Miss World organization for not taking a stand for her, saying that will set a bad precedent in the future when dealing with China's human rights concerns. Carolyn Persutti for Yan Chen, VOA News, Washington.
And when you have a chance, check out the video to that story. It's on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Genes play a role in the development of cancer, but a new study suggests that genetic bad luck, which predisposes us to cancer, may be less of an influence on our risk for the disease than environmental factors. VOA's Jessica Berman has more.
Genes are not destiny seems to be the message from a new study looking at the relative risk of environmental factors on the development of cancer. In fact, says Yusuf Hanoun, who heads the Stony Brook University Cancer Center in New York, bad genes and DNA mutations appear to play a relatively small role in whether someone develops cancer. More important, he says, are environmental exposures such as inhaling tobacco smoke and eating red meat.
Around 70 to 90% of cancer incidence appears to be related to external factors, whereas only 10 to 30% is related to those intrinsic factors I talked about with mutation rates, etc.
Hanun and colleagues used a number of complex approaches, including computer modeling, population studies, and genetic analyses, to arrive at their conclusions published in the journal Nature. For example, they looked at how stem cells in different parts of the body divide and mutate, noting that a similar number of genetic errors did not lead to cancer in all tissues. The researchers also investigated how people's risk of cancer changes when they move from one place to another, suggesting a strong role for external factors in the development of cancer. A study published earlier this year in the journal Science concluded most cancer was the result of genetic bad luck, but this study arrives at an opposite conclusion. Hanun, however, does not entirely rule out genetic randomness when it comes to who gets cancer and who doesn't.
So there is an element of luck in that, but then there is a larger element of exposures and external factors that increase that risk tremendously. So what we want to do is identify those and dial it back so we go back to that very low intrinsic level.
In the meantime, some big cancer risk factors like cigarette smoking are already known and can be avoided. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
The late Michael Jackson has been thrilling music fans for decades. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins us with a new milestone for the pop star.
It's actually turned 33. It was released on November 30th, 1982. But yes, 30 is the number of the day because this is the first album to go 30 times platinum in the United States, and that means record sales of greater than 30 million, according to the Recording Industry Association of America, and it's unprecedented.
That's not bad, to quote another Michael Jackson record.
That is not bad.
Where did you come from, baby? And ooh, won't you take me there right away?
Thriller, of course, was a cultural phenomenon. It spent 37 weeks at number one on the Billboard album chart. It has sold more than 100 million copies worldwide. And Michael Jackson has sold more than 1 billion records in total. And the numbers are just mind-boggling. And what's even more mind-boggling is that when he died on June 25th, 2009, he was an estimated $500 million in debt. You might remember that it seemed like everybody was suing Michael Jackson. He was just surrounded by legal issues. Mm-hmm. He was hemorrhaging money. But in the past 6 years, the Michael Jackson estate has pretty much dug itself out of that gigantic hole. As of June 2015, the late Michael Jackson's net worth was an estimated $600 million. His estate has generated around $2 billion, and that comes from record sales, his concert film This Is It, and a Cirque du Soleil show that features the music of Michael Jackson. So right now, his estate has just about broken even.
This isn't the first time that we have seen a departed artist doing almost better in the afterlife than when they were around.
Well, of course, Elvis Presley is another great example because they've passed into cultural legend and their records just keep on selling. They're legacy artists. And I don't see any drop-off for Elvis and Michael in the coming years.
The Thriller video was probably one of the most lasting visual images that we have of Michael Jackson.
It was the most expensive video ever at the time it premiered in 1983. Yeah, it helped put MTV on the map, and it helped make music videos what they are today. That's another lasting legacy that Michael Jackson can claim.
A groundbreaker in many ways, and now in the monetary realm. Breaking ground each and every week is our Top 20 Countdown host, Ray McDonald. You can find him out there on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
And we hope you follow him. Ray, thanks so much for stopping by.
You got it, Jim. Thank you.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, that's voanews.com. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter. Our Facebook handle is VOA Asia on Facebook. Twitter is @VOA_IE. Either way, great stuff out there each and every day for you to follow. You can email us as well, voaasia@voanews.com. If you have something to write to us, we'd love to read it. Our engineer is Daryl Smith. Our director is Tracy Carter. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington, and we thank you so much for joining us. Come back and visit. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The ocean is our lifeline. It produces much of our oxygen, regulates our climate, and supports the greatest abundance of life on our planet. If the ocean were to lose its capacity to provide these services, it would threaten the survival of nearly every creature and every plant. The ocean is fragile. The ocean is an ecosystem, and the ocean requires stewardship, just like every other aspect of life on this planet. And for all its size and its majesty, and it is majestic for those who've spent time on the ocean, it is vulnerable, said Secretary of State John Kerry at an event on the sidelines of the Paris Climate Conference. No one should underestimate how critical it is to deal with the three great problems of the ocean today, he said. The first of these is pollution. It happens inadvertently, not willfully, but nevertheless, it is one of those byproducts of development and industrialization and agribusiness. So, for example, nitrates in agricultural runoff cause ever-expanding dead zones. Plastic trash carried on the currents creates problems for navigation and jeopardizes sea creatures. The second problem is illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, IUU for short. Illegal fishers take too many fish. They also frequently use damaging practices and equipment, such as the destructive drift net. Drift nets and other destructive fishing practices have been banned, but there is not enough enforcement. We must change that, said Secretary of State Kerry, and we can start by marshaling all available resources. We're putting together a system of interconnectedness on a global law enforcement and military basis, linking also with satellites, with NASA and others, in order to try to put together a regulatory mechanism. A third problem, ocean acidification, caused by increased concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, kills coral reefs and destroys habitat fish need for spawning. An estimated 30% to 40% of the carbon dioxide from human activity released into the atmosphere dissolves into oceans, rivers, and lakes. For our part, the United States aims to designate for protection 10% of ocean and coastal areas. We are also working to conserve important coastal ecosystems, areas such as mangroves and salt marshes that serves as sinks to absorb carbon dioxide. Working together, the international community must ensure that agricultural and fishing practices are made sustainable and shape our energy policies to address climate change and acidification, said Secretary of State Kerry. The ocean is key to life itself. We can't live without it. Together, we must protect it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.